Welcome back to another midweek episode of the Andrew Hines Real Estate Investing Podcast. I'm, of course, your host, Andrew Hines. And once again, these midweek episodes are just about a raw discussion. Well, I guess it's one way, a monologue of me just talking about what I'm up to, what's on my mind, and you know, what's relevant, what's current. So I have a few different thoughts for today I wanted to cover. Today, I really just wanted to focus on what's making sense in my estimation from an investment standpoint? Like what types of areas am I seeing people focus? Where am I seeing stuff work and where not? And I would say right off the bat, I want to address this elephant in the room that so many Canadians are looking out of the country. And while I totally get it, and this is, you know, this is recorded the day before it posts, so it's very, very recent and timely information. I totally get that people are upset by the capital gains tax hike, and they're upset by a lot of the liberal policies that are sort of, you know, turning Canada into a place where landlords don't really seem like they're going to have a lot of rights. In my perspective, the long run outlook is going to be like pure institutional ownership, nearly pure across Canada. In other words, it's going to be funds and large corporations that are owning everything, and the individual obviously kind of get shut out of that. So smaller landlords won't make it. So the best combatants I have for that is run your business like a business. So if you think about how these larger companies do it, they're very organized and not emotional. If tenants don't pay, they have a process for that. They're very diligent. They play with the rules because, like, let's face it, crony capitalism is a thing, meaning that large corporations like grease the palms of politicians who make things go in their favor. So once the transition happens over to corporate ownership, I actually think landlord-friendly laws are going to come into place in Ontario. So that's kind of where I see things going, looking way ahead. So knowing that, you could actually be a beneficiary. So it's not that I'm encouraging long-term investment in Ontario. I think some are going to do that and it's going to be very profitable for them because there's obviously a case for Ontario going up in price point and Canada in general going up in price point. Whether that does happen, that will be determined on, you know, based on a number of factors, including the laws. So you have immigration, that's certainly a part of it. And then you have emigration, which is all these wealthy Canadians that are kind of thinking, hey, you know what, maybe I'm going to go take my money somewhere else. And let's face it, we know many people who are in that boat. But then there's the other category that are just crushing here in Ontario. And I just had a guy on my podcast. This episode won't launch for a couple of weeks, but he's putting together a large-scale development in the North Bruce Peninsula area, so Port Elgin, Southampton, Sauble Beach area. And he's got 60 acres, which he's turning into a monstrous number of units. I forget, it's in the several hundreds. So townhouses, detached houses, and then two buildings of about 56 apartments. And he's going to be selling them to investors. And he was working the math out with me. He's going to be building them himself. He's developing it himself. He'll be selling it at, you know, 8.8% rule. So we talk about the 1% rule as being like the gold standard. Hey, you're really doing well. Now, with the higher interest rate climate, it's obviously not as good as it once was. But at the numbers he's talking about, there's cash flow there. There should be. And he's talking about selling it in clusters. So you could buy like these single detached houses with three units with the new laws in Ontario, thanks to Bill 23. You can build as of right with three units in the building. So he's going to do, I think he said 2 3-bedroom units and then a 2-bedroom unit. And one of these units would be pulling like $7,500 a month in rent or something along those lines. That might be a little optimistic. It might be a little lower than that. But very, very good numbers. And so I do see people winning in Ontario, but is it just your typical buy and hold? Not. I mean, I don't really think so. I mean, I'm sure there are some that are doing that. It's more, I see a lot of people with the idea they're pivoting towards purpose-built construction, built to go into the CMHC program for MLI Select at 50 years because they're doing high-efficiency builds or they're doing accessibility or they're, you know, maybe just going to go into the standard 40 year, but I think a lot of them are going to lever up and you know, take that 95% financing. So they're going to be in for very low amounts. They'll be able to potentially pull money out. And then they'll also, of course, have, you know, favorable interest rate and cash flow for the long run. Now, do I love those super long amortizations? Like, definitely not. I'm not a huge fan. I like the idea of paying off my property. But if you have built, you know, brand new construction, you know that it should hold up for the life of that mortgage. That's a big part of the reason, of course, CMHC would even be willing to lend that way, because they look at what's the useful life as a building. Any lender typically does, and they'll only lend you an amortization that matches the max useful life. To a max of, you know, 50 years in the case of CMHC with MLI Select. For me, of course, I'd prefer something that pays off faster, the idea of having something that'll do that for you quicker. But it's not a bad option. Do I love it? Is there no risk involved in that? No, that's not true. But it's definitely okay. I guess to me, like, I want to be prepared for anything in Ontario. And if, say, values do stagnate or go down a bit, I want to know that I'm always paying off and staying ahead of that. So if it were me, I might just take the 40-year just to know it's paying off a bit quicker. And everyone has their own comfort level. So that's something I see people doing, and I hear a lot about it, like even builders doing that concept of a forward sale. So say, not a builder necessarily. So say I own a building, it's a little rough, it's 20 units, it could use some work. I could actually do an energy efficiency study. So say I sign an agreement with a buyer for a price that's worth way more than what it's actually worth now, on the assumption that I'm going to finish renovations. And the contract outlines which renovations I'm going to do. And I do those renovations after an energy audit's done for the efficiency standards for MLI Select, like the CMHC program. And then once we're done, I get the other audit, and now I can qualify that building for 95% financing, 50-year AM. So as the seller, I could potentially get way more for my building, knowing, hey, I can renovate, I can do all that stuff. And if I'm willing to be patient and go through, say, a year-long process with the buyer, I can do that concept of the forward sale, where I am basically financing the renovations myself. I'll pay for it all, knowing full well that I'm going to get a higher number at the end. And what that does for the buyer, it allows them to roll into that MLI program right off the bat. And if they can roll into that program right off the bat, they're willing to pay more. So that's the opportunistic Ontarian or Canadian taking advantage of that. And I'm hearing more and more of people doing that kind of strategy. Also your typical syndication. So go in and buy a property like that and then get condo status and sell the individual units for a profit. So that's something you can do as well. These aren't your simple strategies, like go and buy a house and add an extra unit. Although I know people are doing that too, because you can still convert units. When some towns are allowing up to 4 units per house, if you get a house with a big footprint and you're able to put in some of that work on your own, like as a smaller investor, if you've got the time, you can make those deals make sense too. So it's not like everybody needs to leave the country, you know, 100%. I think it's a good idea to have some eggs in a different basket, because having all your eggs in one basket is generally not wise. So those are just my 2 cents. This isn't financial advice. I can't advise you. I don't know your situation specifically. And even if I did, I wouldn't be giving you specific advice on that. These are just my thoughts. So as you know, I'm active in Florida. Like, we've been doing some cool stuff down there. Things are finally starting to pick up. We've had, you know, at any given time, we have like 4 or 5 active accepted offers, and we're in the due diligence phase. That's kind of where we're at now. Like, we have many, many leads. We have many acquisitions managers calling people all day long and just evaluating deals. And a lot of what we're finding is, of course, people are wanting more than we're going to pay them. So some of them, it's just like, hey, I'll follow up with you. And what we're noticing is those deals do come back around. We stay in touch and they come back around. Others, we tie them up and we do our due diligence. We realize we can't pay that much. Well, now we go back and renegotiate. We just had one like that. We got it down from $13,000 to $5,000 an acre. So I'm pretty pumped about that one. Proof of concept, you know, you can renegotiate these deals as needed. And when you're respectful and you have good rapport with a seller, it's very doable as long as you give them an explanation. So that's sort of our angle there. So like, looking at high level in the US, do I think turnkey works? Yes and no. So Canadians, depending on where you want to buy, yes, you can actually get into turnkey and have a cash flow on day one. And like, your overall ROI is going to be somewhere between, from what I've seen, 10 to 15%, your overall ROI. So it's not like blow the socks off or anything like that. But depending on what you believe about real estate values in the future in the US, your return could be much higher. I'm just saying conservatively, if you're not expecting appreciation, those are the numbers I've run. You could check out the episode I did with Andrew Kim from Share on my podcast. And I also had his business partner on the podcast or on REI Hot Seat several months back, probably about 2 months back. So if you want to check out that episode, business partner's, his name is escaping me, but it'll probably come back to me. So it depends on the state you want. I don't think the state of Florida is going to work for that. But if you wanted to make that work, you'd be looking at what are the landlord-friendly states. And I think a lot of Canadians are doing this. They're looking for niche pockets in certain towns. I just had a guy on my podcast who's doing it in Cleveland, but they're buying bigger buildings. But you can do it on smaller houses too. Previous guest of the podcast, Glenn Sutherland, he does a lot of that. He'll buy in different medium and small towns, suburbs outside of cities like Columbus, Ohio. Ohio's a popular one just because it's so landlord friendly and the price point's much lower. So you'll see those type of opportunities. They can make a lot of sense, in my opinion. Like, I'm not saying they'll make sense for everybody, because there's also the other factor of what's going to happen long term with real estate values. I'll always prioritize cash flow over speculative appreciation. That's just me. Not everybody agrees. But anyways, those are my thoughts so far. Just what I'm seeing, what's happening in the market. If you're a turnkey, want to be cash flow investor, that's like not keen on Canada right now, that's your angle. Probably looking for something that's like asset managed, or you do the due diligence, you build your own team and you build your own portfolio. But you're not going to do that for one or two, because the tax filings and all that stuff, you're just not going to do it for a one-off. So just keep that in mind. If you're going to make a transition into another country, it's not going to be for one property. It just will not make sense. Because you'll pay $5,000 to $10,000 a year in annual filings between Canada and the US just for your accountants and your corporate upkeep. So, you know, if you're ready for all that, if you're serious about doing business, that could make sense. But I'd just rather, you know, give you full transparency. It's not for everybody. And for some people, staying in Canada and making it work in Canada, where it is still very viable to make deals work, it might be the right solution. But with a plan, in my opinion, to eventually diversify nationally, internationally. So anyways, if you have any thoughts or you have stuff you'd like me to cover on the podcast for these midweek episodes, send me your questions, send me your topics in a DM on Instagram or to my email, andrew@andrew-hines.com. Thanks for tuning in. Show the channel some love. Leave a 5-star rating and review if you haven't already. And I will see you next week.